Here's the metaphor. God is a woman giving birth, and we are the midwife attending to God and to the new life that is coming into the world. That's the image that we're going to be unpacking in this episode of Spiritual Life and Leadership. I realize it's not an image that normally comes to mind when we think about God, but it certainly is not an unbiblical image. Listen to how God describes himself in Isaiah 42:14. This is what God says. He says, "For a long time I have kept silent. I have been quiet and held myself back, but now, like a woman in childbirth, I cry out, I gasp and pant." Man, that's a powerful and visceral image of God. Today's guest is Christiana Rice, who, together with her husband Derek, leads a ministry in downtown San Diego called Thresholds. Thresholds exists to encourage and equip followers of Jesus to learn to pursue deeply incarnational ways of being the church. A few years ago, Christiana wrote a book together with missiologist Michael Frost entitled To Alter Your World, and it's in this book that Christiana works out the implications of this metaphor of God as a woman in labor, and it's in this episode that we're going to unpack this metaphor even more. I'm Marcus Watson, and this is episode 12 of Spiritual Life and Leadership. I'm sitting with Christiana Rice in her home, not far from downtown San Diego, just a mile or so. And Christiana is a trainer and coach with Thresholds, a ministry here in San Diego. She works with community leaders and churches to help them discover their vocational call. And I'm excited to talk with Christiana today. Hi, Christiana.
Hello, Marcus.
How are you doing?
Great.
Good.
Welcome to my home.
Thank you very much. And let me also say that Christiana is the co-author of Michael Frost, with Michael Frost.
The co-author of Michael Frost.
With Michael Frost of a book called To Alter Your World, which came out a couple of years ago. And we're going to talk about some of the ideas in that book and some of the ideas that you really just kind of use in your work and ministry. I want to start by asking you just a couple of rapid-fire questions. This is the second time I'm doing this with someone I'm talking to, just as I find is a fun way to get to know you. And so, Christiana, let me ask you this question. What job would you be terrible at?
Ooh, yes. Well, my kids often joke that I'm the worst craftswoman they know. So let me clarify. And I always tell them, you know, I'm good at other things. I like singing and writing and, you know, communicating, but don't put embroidery in front of me or so I would be really bad at working at Michael's. That's not a good space for me.
Okay, good to know. When do you feel truly alive?
Yes. I think sometimes there's an airplane passing by. Yeah. Which is perfect because we're right under the flight path here in San Diego, and I would say I feel most alive when I'm traveling.
Oh,
see the connection there?
Yeah, awesome.
I almost feel like I'm most alive when I'm on the airplane headed somewhere.
Oh, nice.
But I think it's when I land and I get to enter into a new culture and figure out, you know, who I am as I'm engaging a new people in a new place.
Yeah. And speaking of which, you grew up in Japan.
I did, yes. Yeah. So that's kind of the classic case with anyone who grew up internationally.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the joke goes that you're most at home when you're in the air, in the airplane across the skies, because you're not quite sure where your home is.
Yeah.
But I think more than that, it's a sense of just finding enjoyment and engagement and inspiration by being in different cultures.
Oh, that's cool. And you speak fluent Japanese, right?
I do. Yes.
And I saw a commercial once that you were in, like when you were like, I don't know, 12 or 13 or something.
Yeah, I grew up in on TV commercials in Tokyo, Japan. I was kind of a little child, you know, not quite a child star, but I'm a redheaded, freckled-faced Japanese speaker, so that's a bit of an anomaly over there. Yeah.
Can I post a link to that in the show notes?
You can try to find it. You know, you still have access to it.
Somebody
posted it somewhere. And
I know. Well, go if you find it, send it to me because it's really tough to find them online.
Okay.
But
if I can find it, I'll post
okay.
it. Okay. If you're okay with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Well, a couple more questions. What would be a mirror opposite of yourself? What would they look like?
Ah, yes. A mirror opposite of me would be just this is a tough one because I actually want to be kind. Uh-huh. I think just maybe a real
jerk would be.
Since I'm so nice and friendly, I do think somebody who's maybe lived their whole life in one home, in one place, in rural America.
Okay.
And is a little bit more shy and recluse, and maybe even also, I'll just say this, into very very lives kind of a solitary life because my life is pretty communal and pretty global and pretty urban, and so if I think of all those components, so a little less around personality, a little more around sort of life circumstance. I think.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. If your life was a book, what would its title be?
It would have a person, sort of a cartoon character figure of myself. Somehow the cover of the book would be animated, so you could see it move. Yeah, and I would be juggling these little globes from the dollar store, say, which I have bought little globes from the dollar store, And it would be called Juggling Worlds because I think I do a lot of my sense of call is, and there's challenge and there's blessing in that, right? So the challenge of living between worlds, but also entering into new places and helping people make sense of their world. Yeah. So there's a lot of metaphor around that. So Juggling Worlds with a little redhead on the front,
awesome.
With some dollar store puffy globes.
Awesome. and what would the title of the current chapter of your life be?
Yeah. The title presently for me is I think I've spent a lot of years working specifically in the U.S. Probably the last 10 years has been pretty U.S. focused, and I'm sensing God shift me and moving into some more global influence or some leaders that are actually international.
Yeah.
So I think it would be something like. Exploring the world again or something like that. That's sort of this next stage. You know, my kids are now 10 and 8, and so I'm in this space of a little bit more discernment on what my capacity looks like, and God keeps kind of bringing up some international opportunities. So
cool.
I'm excited about that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a title for your chapter?
Yeah. So it would be exploring global the world again.
Okay,
yes,
good.
Yes,
that
yes.
sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. I want to say also that Christiana and I first met about three and a half years ago. I was a pastor of a church here in San Diego, and her husband Derek became a worship leader at my church, and then Kate Hurley also, who was part of your community here.
Yes.
And I had all you guys over to our house for dinner, for lunch, just to kind of get to know you. And so I'm kind of setting up where we're going here now. And you mentioned that you were writing a book with Michael Frost. And I was like, what? What? How did that happen? Or like, what is going on here? And you're sitting in my house. But anyway, a celebrity.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
No, but tell us a little bit about how you got connected with Michael Frost and how that led to the book then.
Great. Yeah. So I was, back in my undergraduate studies and then my early graduate studies, I was becoming really intrigued, if not sort of borderline dorky, obsessed with leadership principles and specifically maybe missional leadership. So how are people of influence joining the work of God's restoration and God's mission in the world, and also rallying others to join in as well? And then out of that, what is the formation of the church? So that was stuff I was thinking about a good 15 years ago now, and so I ended up at a conference called Missio.
Okay.
In Denver, and I heard a guy named Michael Frost, whom I had actually read a couple of his books at that point, but I was captivated by him as a teacher and as a storyteller, And then his colleague, Alan Hirsch, was also someone I'd been generally had overlapped with a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that, again, was a long time ago. But then around maybe 5 or 6 years ago now, I was hosting and emceeing a conference called the Inhabit Conference in Seattle.
Okay.
And Michael was one of the keynote speakers, Michael Frost. And I got to introduce him. And so kind of in preparation for introducing him, we were at a restaurant with a bunch of folks, and we were joking around, and we ended up having a great conversation. And so we kind of bonded. I sat with him a lot during a few sessions, and he was all the way out from Australia.
Yeah.
And then, you know, within the month, you want to hear quickly the story of how we wrote together. So essentially, I think we just kind of found a lot of affinity real quickly, more relationally, I'd say. Okay. And then I'd ask him questions and we'd kind of banter back and forth on a few topics that seemed like we both cared about.
Yeah.
And I was at that point thinking of doing more writing, but I really felt like I wanted to co-author. And just to be more, even more explicit, co-author with a male author, because as a woman in this kind of missional church field, it's a little, it's a steep road to get, to gain credibility, to be honest. And I trust my own credibility, but I felt like it would be kind of a smart, wise move to write with a man where, you know, a lot of the audience tends to be male leaders.
Yeah,
and so anyway, so I actually wrote him an email and just said, hey, I'm thinking of co-authoring. And I think I need to write with a man. Here are the reasons. Here's what I want to write about. And he wrote back to me and said, you know, I don't really co-author. And I've only really written with my best friend, Al Hirsch. But would you be interested in writing with me? Which, of course, was like, you know, of course was kind of, I literally fell out of my seat when I got the email because I was not expecting that at all. And then he proceeded to say, that is, if you're any good at writing. So, of course, then the whole process of like, okay, well, do I really have what it takes? And so it was really significant for me. And and so from there, we decided to kind of move forward and see if we both had what it took to do this together, if we were a good fit.
Right.
And it just unfolded really beautifully. And we both kind of say it was just really bizarre, but we felt like the Holy Spirit was leading the process. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And it took a while by the time everything kind of came together. Yeah. We probably wrote the book in about 9 months, but then once you go through the entire editing, publishing, marketing process, it was about a 3-year process.
Wow, 3-year process.
Yeah.
It takes a long time.
It does.
Wow.
It really does.
All right. And so the book is called To Alter Your World. And kind of one of the key primary images in the book is God giving birth and the church as a midwife, right? Which is, I don't think before you had You had told me about it before I read the book, which got me really interested in the book, but I had never heard that before. And so maybe you can just kind of tell, where did you come up with that? Or did you come up with it? Or where did it come? How did you come to it? And then maybe you can unpack that a little.
For sure. I mean, you know, people have written and spoken very, very, I would say, peripherally, kind of fringe. It's kind of a fringe theological thought around what it means to you know, what God is birthing.
Yeah.
However, usually, often, or maybe the concept of midwifing. So often people will associate the spiritual birth as, you know, I'm birthing or something is being birthed.
Right.
And what I've found is the more common metaphor in it is God midwives the things that are being birthed. And so I had been, you know, so even contemporary writers like Brené Brown talks a lot about, you know, midwifing the things of the spirit that are being, that are being birthed in us. But I had moments, so the birth of my children, of course, and I also very, very part-time am a birth doula, so I support women in labor and delivery and postpartum. And I just had a growing question of what really is going on if we connect missiological terms or missiology. You know, God, it's God's work, and what is our role? Our role, often we say, is to join the mission of God, or to join God in God's restorative mission.
Right.
And I think it just sort of is a revelatory through experience where I began to wonder, wait, if you think about scripture, scripture actually portrays God not only as parent, but actually specifically as mother or as a, you know, a brooding hen, a mother over her young. Or, you know, in Isaiah, it speaks of God as the one who is the rescue of God is actually portrayed as this woman in labor, groaning and panting and for to give birth to the new earth or to the new, to what's going to be new for the children of Israel. Right. And that is, that's the sort of symbol or the story or the metaphorical character that God, Yahweh, chooses is this birthing metaphor. Yeah. So from there, I then began to ask, well, if God is the one giving birth, then who are we? We're the attendants. We're the midwives. And I'm very familiar, and especially now, with the role of the midwife is a professional, you know, medical professional who is trained specifically experts at the, at really the magic and the miracle of birth and the whole process. And so the more I explored that metaphor, the more it seemed really fitting for what it means for us, for us to participate in the mission of God.
Yeah. And so what are the qualities of a midwife that you think apply to the church as we are midwives for what God, whatever God is birthing?
Yes. well, and I would, you know, I would say, I'm going to do a quick just sort of semantics shift or language shift on this. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's the church joining.
Okay.
I mean, in essence, it is still a semantics question, but I would say it's humanity.
Oh, okay.
And that the church, as God restores, as God births, God is birthing sort of restorative realities and transforming, and then the church comes into being.
Oh,
so it's the cyclical nature of, yes, and then we get to midwife more of if we, it's just, you have to be careful, I think, because sometimes it's people finding their way, you know. yeah, I mean, it's a good discussion because it's contested. But yeah, what would you, I see your face.
No, I mean, I like it. So I like what comes to mind for me is someone who, well, so I'm looking out the window here at your neighborhood. All these people, whether or not they're in a church, might be midwifing something in their homes, in this neighborhood, on this street.
Yes.
And then the church is all, it's almost like the church is the baby.
Yep, right. Well, really, if you play it out, I don't know that the you know, truly, if God's dream is actualized on earth, like the kingdom, meaning the reign of God, the reign and rule of God in Christ on earth is happening, then that means people find belonging within the community of God, which is the church, right?
Yeah.
As children of the creator and the energizer of all things.
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, it's still a it's not a church centric metaphor. It's a God centric metaphor.
Right.
It's a mission centric metaphor
that
then says that the outcome is the church.
Yeah.
So that's,
ooh.
But it's a shift.
That's good.
It is a shift. And I think personally, I feel it's an important one.
Yeah.
Because it talks about our discipleship in a different way, you know, as far as like, are we discipled into, kingdom, or could our discipleship be happening as we are already discovering that we've been attending to the work of God?
Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah, you're
like
welcome.
I need to scratch a couple of these questions off my list here. Okay, I want to go down this road if it's okay. Can someone who is not, by most Christian standards, someone who's like that, I don't think that person's a Christian, can that person be midwifing something of God in the world?
I mean, I think and I believe that it's if you know, it is the Bible narrative that God loves humanity, and that humanity was fashioned in this way that that actually holds within us, each of us, a soul that has an impulse to live out our true call and vocation.
Yeah.
And that is to attend, to join, to partic- like to find our place and our purpose in life, which is to be a part of this, this beautiful act of love and joy and peace and patience and kindness, the fruit of the act of the Spirit's transformation. And so, yes, I believe that all humanity is capable and called to participate. Yeah. And in that, I think people can find the find Jesus.
Yeah. So I just want to clarify, I really resonate with this.
Yes, I can tell. I can tell. I can tell.
I'm asking the questions, but I think, you know, anytime you see beauty and joy and healing and wholeness, that means whether there are, I'm using finger quotes, Christians
in
the room or not, that God has brought something into that place,
right?
God, beauty is from God. Healing is from God. It doesn't matter who brings it or who has midwifed it, right?
Yes. And I do think that we as in the Christian household, we've made a lot of hurtful mistakes that have not served or attended well by thinking that somehow it becomes ethno or any egocentric, like a Christian egocentric way of going about mission, when we think that we are somehow better at it than our neighbors who are actually also have that divine spark, if you will, that God is longing to invite them into this greater narrative of what it means for us all to participate.
Yeah.
And so in that, you know, we tell stories in the book, and I would say majority of them are certainly people who are Jesus followers, but there are a variety of stories kind of peppered in, you know, that we don't even explicitly name, but they're in there, and they're not stories of people who are quite on the full followership of Jesus' path. But some of it, even I tell a couple stories in there of my own journey of spiritual formation and how that has happened so profoundly through neighbors who are participating in such beautiful ways, of whom I've learned from. And then, you know, we get to learn together and see how Jesus might be transforming all of us along our own path at our different ways and paces. So
I think one of the things I've heard you say in the past is that a midwife, in fact, you say it in the book, it means a with woman or something.
Yeah,
right?
It does.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And and so to midwife is more about being with the one giving birth than getting something to happen.
Yes,
right?
It is.
So often I think churches want to get control of their situation, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that situation is, they get control of their ministries, get control of how many people are showing up to church, right? Mm-hmm. Get control of all kinds of things, their finances, you know. And so, the connection here is the way I've heard you talk about midwifing in the past is it's not so much about control. Mm-hmm. I mean, how would you characterize that? Like, what are the things that that churches need to let go of,
or
need to take hold of, as we learn to participate with God?
Wonderful.
With God, the Mother.
Yes. To be with. That's a great way to start that. Mm-hmm. And that, I think birth is just such a profound metaphor when we think of both the intimacy of being with God and as well as the activity of what God is then doing, right? So you picture, which, you know, I also like the metaphor that it's generally provocative, and though it also can feel exclusive in some ways because it's it's a uniquely female experience, and it's also only a it's a uniquely female experience that not even all females have. Right. So I'm very careful that though I use very tangible examples with midwifery and birth, mm-hmm. It's metaphor, and so they're all symbolic. So okay. Women at large, all women. Give birth and nurture life, mm-hmm. In some way. Yeah. And so I think that kind of can span across. Okay. We've all been born. Yeah, so yeah. We all can relate in that regard. So it's just kind of a human reality to okay. have been born into the world. Yeah. Right. So, but again, in a birthing space. So, and I say space because some babies are born outdoors and some uh-huh. babies are born in hospital rooms, yeah, yeah. Around the world. But in a birthing space, the role of being with a woman in labor is incredibly intimate and vulnerable, yeah, right? Yeah. And yet birth happens. You cannot speed it. In fact, if mm-hmm. you try to control it, you are obstructing the very thing that it's meant to be, mm-hmm. which is this very natural process of body, mm-hmm. of the body doing what the body mm-hmm. needs to do. Now, there are also ways that you can participate in making sure that the space, even the body, and of course, every metaphor also breaks down uh-huh. Because God is sure. perfection. But you know, even in the miracle of the body and the mm-hmm. way God made it, that there are things that can both help birth mm. progress well, and that there are things that can prevent birth mm. from progressing well. Yeah. So it is a skill. There are skills to be learned. Yeah. There are practices. We call them practices, okay. Which I think fits really well because basically your character matters. Yeah. So in birth, your character matters. If mm. if you're going into a birth with a sense without humility mm-hmm. and without an ability to say, I may not know.
Meaning the midwife.
Yeah. If a midwife enters in a birth environment and uh-huh. without humility, for example, example, even though she's been through thousands of births before, she must enter a birth, any new birth, with humility, knowing that this birth is unique and different right. and will have its own storyline that is unlike any other birth mm-hmm. that's ever happened. So mm-hmm. let's relate that to, let's say, church planting or starting a social entrepreneur venture or creating something in the world right. or participating in some kind of act of justice and love and loving your neighbors or evangelism. Right. If you enter into a neighborhood, a space, an environment, a subculture group, anything, without humility, thinking that you know exactly what this is supposed to be, you have the potential of controlling it and actually preventing it from becoming what it's meant to be. So I'll just say, you know, humility, releasing our agendas, coming in as guardians to say, we're going to be the ones that protect anything that's going to bring in. So that's even dark forces, you know, learning the skill and the practices of how we actually guard against the things that are threats. Yeah. So you think about the whole, what is God birthing? So let's just use something like love and community. So we can look at society, we can look mm-hmm. at our environment and say, mm-hmm. what are the things that are in direct opposition to love mm-hmm. and community and belonging mm-hmm. for all people in this place? Well, as a midwife to the work of God to bring love and community and belonging, we are the ones who get to foster mm-hmm. love, foster, you know, it becoming a community that welcomes and hospitality. Yeah. We get to be communities that help all people find their place of belonging. Yeah. And that's a really different than, you know, here are the four steps to A, being a good moral Christian or, you know, starting a successful church or even, you know, helping people and starting a good mission or nonprofit, you know, because these people need this, right. which we can look historically at all the ways we've gone wrong with that.
Right.
The conquests and, you know, to name the big ones, but even in small ways, I think we do it. So that's kind of a long, semi-messy way of answering your question, but it's really the posture and practice of a midwife as an attendant who always knows she's not the one giving birth.
Right.
She's not the one giving birth. In fact, it would be so ludicrous for the midwife to say, I gave birth to that baby.
Oh, right.
Because she didn't. So it's the same with God and God's mission.
Right.
We say, no, it's God's mission. Right. God is the one who is birthing the restorative realities in our world.
Yeah.
And I just get to attend. Yeah. But I must attend faithfully.
Yeah.
I must learn what it means to attend with character and with humility and with integrity.
You know? Yeah. So I'm a pastor.
Yep.
And, and you know, I think about...
Bless you.
Thank you. that's really hard. And it's hard to help people get that, right? It's hard to, because they want to see the success. They want to see the numbers.
Course,
they want to see what are we getting accomplished, right? And that's part of our culture too,
yes,
I think.
Yeah.
American and Western achievement and all that.
Right.
What are we achieving?
Right,
What are we conquering, so to speak?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do you have any, and maybe we'll kind of close with this. Do you have any stories, or do you know of any Christian communities, churches, or maybe yours that in some way have let go of the need to dominate and get stuff done and just be attentive to what God is birthing and be a part of that?
Yes. Okay. Well, yeah, many stories. And also they're the untold stories, you know, they're the underground or the seemingly unglamorous stories. But if you start piling them up, you know, if we must, if you started collecting them all, there really is no book, you know, long enough to really hold them.
Right.
They're uncountable. And that to me is, it's more likened to the uncontainable wildflowers than it is to a well scripted garden that you can, which ultimately everyone knows, even the gardens we plant, even the gardens we plant are dependent and are you know, to the forces of those seasons or of the soil or of the particular environment, right? So even that is not ultimately controllable.
Yeah.
But if you liken it more to wildflowers, where they just show up and sometimes they take over and sometimes they're so surprising and sometimes they take your breath away because they just popped up and spread everywhere and nobody can contain them.
Yeah.
You know, I think of sort of those stories like that than I do as, you know, the carefully scripted gardens we plant.
Right.
That said, I am on the Enneagram. For anyone who is familiar with the Enneagram, I'm a Enneagram 3 through and through.
Okay.
So Achiever, I'm really familiar with it. So I confess that this metaphor is a part of my spiritual formation. Because I get it. I get the alternative metaphors of, in fact, I'm motivated by, especially in my shadow, I'm motivated by the numbers and the statistics and the let's get this done, let's move fast, you know, the pace.
Yeah.
And I'm motivated by the praise and I'm motivated by the wanting to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, I want that stuff.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah.
And yet what has really been transforming me through this metaphor, of course, other ways that God's at work inside of me as I live out my call in the world, has been to trust processes of God, to trust a pace that's beyond me, to trust that my faithfulness is truly enough, and to trust that that the metrics that have dominated our, I think, even imagination within both church formation, church growth, church planting, as well as mission. I'll add evangelism in there. You know, things, ministry. Our metrics, honestly, they're too small. They really are just they're just too small. And they leave most of us disappointed, except for maybe the very few who meet and exceed the expectations, which are very few. And even them, you look a little deeper and they're still struggling in their own ways holistically. But most of us get left behind in our own disappointment and discouragement that we didn't match up. We didn't, you know, we're doubting ourselves. We're doubting our calling. We're doubting whether anything we're doing really makes us any sense. And in our darkest places, we wonder if we're living a meaningless existence. I mean, you know, at the deepest, darkest places, that's what we're wondering.
Right.
And so I really feel that I just want to trust, and I'll go with the metaphor, I want to trust that the birthing mother knows what she's doing. I want to trust that life is truly the dream and the way of God, that that life, resurrection is actually happening and will happen and will have the victory in the end, and I don't mean that just only in at the end as far as after death. I think even my eschatology would say that even within this renewal of earth as is, new heaven, new earth, I want to trust that, and I want to excavate the stories of life and resurrection and restoration that are happening. So, and sometimes those stories take a year, and sometimes they take 10 years, and sometimes it's the faithful work of 20 years, you know, to where then something is actually visibly there. So even in my own neighborhood, I'd say, you know, it was about 7 years of deeply coming to know this place and this neighborhood and this city. And then I got really involved with the school system and understanding sort of the history, like of what has happened here with kids and the different demographic disparities and under-resourced schools, and in contrast with resourced schools. And I remember the moment when I realized, as I'm standing in front of the school board and I'm basically making my case that our neighborhood school was under-resourced and underseen and had a lot more potential than we were giving it credit for. And I realized, oh, that's why. Like, 7 years I've been loving this school, loving this neighborhood, you know, forming community and faith community here. And suddenly I was able to see God do breakthrough where we were, the school is actually given leadership that has changed the whole, I think, texture and terrain of what God's doing there. But it was 7 years. And it was 7 years of feeling, of doubting myself too. You know, is it really enough just to keep loving people and keep researching and keep coming to know the history and keep showing up? And it was, and God gave me the gift of saying like, this is why, you know, and that's not, you know, it's not always even that explicit. But for me, I'd felt like, oh, that was the patient waiting. And with the metaphor of birth as well, you know, every birth has its own time frame. And a lot of labor is waiting. And you wait and you wait and you wait, you wait really faithfully, and you never wait with the thought that, like, ah, maybe it's not going to happen. You always know it's going to happen. You just don't know when, how, where, you know, in what way, what will be the struggles, you know, what, you don't even know what exactly your role will be. And sometimes we're the beginning of stories, and sometimes we're the middle, and sometimes we're the end. But the important thing is our faithfulness and our transformation along the way.
And this is a, I guess in some ways, every person, every church, and I realize it's about humanity, midwifing, but churches are part of that,
right? Sure, sure, of course, yes, yes.
But we got to wrestle with it ourselves and and be open to however God wants to birth stuff with us in our presence,
yes,
you know,
yes.
In our own ways.
Yes.
So thank you for this time and this metaphor, this image, this idea. And it's good. It's challenging and inspiring.
Thanks.
So thanks.
Yeah.
And real quick, how can people connect with you or find what you find you?
Yeah, for sure. I would say, you know, the first place is our organization, thresholdscommunity.org.
Okay.
Thresholds. So that implies that you're crossing over or entering into space where, you know, especially those who are feeling like they're moving into the unknown or the wild and wondering, you know, am I going to make it? It's in transition. It's those particularly leaders, even with a dream and a sense of call. But our role, what we do with Thresholds, we companion them as coaches and trainers. And we have a lot of resourcing of how we come alongside leaders for their lifelong flourishing so that they're living out their vocational call and essentially attending to this big dream of God, what God's birthing in the world.
Awesome.
So thresholdscommunity.org, of course, Facebook, Christiana Rice, and do pick up the book. I you know, you ask for stories, and the book is chock full of stories and practices. And I, for me, it's now a way of life. You know, I just, I feel like I'm just always watching and listening and looking and saying, God, what are you birthing here in the small and in the systemic? So I hope that the book becomes an encouraging resource.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Man, what a great conversation. That was so much fun. I really enjoyed that, and I enjoyed just really kind of wrestling with some of these ideas. Not in the box, right? I mean, this is an image that maybe for some of us even makes us uncomfortable, right? The idea of God as a woman. Question is, this is a question I like to ask myself, when I feel uncomfortable with something, does that say more about the thing that I'm uncomfortable with, or does that say more about something that's going on inside of me, right? So that's something to wrestle with. If the idea of God as a woman in labor is something that makes you uncomfortable, or that is just kind of like, I'm not sure how I feel about that. But anyway, I just think it is a wonderful, beautiful image of what God is doing in the world, that God is birthing new life into the world, and we get to attend to that as God's midwife. So as Christiana mentioned, if you'd like to connect with her, you can connect with her at thresholdscommunity.org. I'll include the link in the show notes, as well as a link to her Facebook page and to the book, To Alter Your World. And if you'd like to check out the show notes, they will be at www.marcuswatson.com/category/podcast. One of these days I'll clean up that link. But for now, that's where it's at. And if you'd like to connect with me, you can follow me on Twitter at Marcus Watson. And Marcus is always with a K, M-A-R-K-U-S, and all of the Marcus Watsons here. You can email me, marcus@marcuswatson.com. And, you know, I'd be so grateful if you would leave a review on iTunes. If this is a podcast that you find valuable, a 5-star review would be so appreciated. But I'm really grateful to have gotten to share this time with you again and with Christiana. And I'm looking forward to the next time we get to do this. So thanks so much for being here. And I will see you next time here on Spiritual Life and Leadership.